Support for WGTD comes from the Studio of Classical Dance Arts, presenting the story of the Nutcracker December 15th and 16th at the Rita on the UW Parkside campus, featuring 69 dancers and over 150 costumes. Tickets and info at classicaldancearts.com.
This is WGTD HD, Kenosha, Racine, Elkhorn, and Lake Geneva. You're listening to Community Matters, a program that highlights various local issues and organizations. It's co-hosted by Lenaya Quinta, a nonprofit manager, fundraiser, and consultant, and Laura Sumner Kuhn, a former journalist at the Racine Journal-Times, who currently serves as an adjunct instructor at UW Parkside. Community Matters shares its time slot with the WGTD Radio Theater. And now, here's today's program.
Good morning and welcome to WGTD's Community Matters. I'm your host, Laura Sumner Kuhn, and I welcome you to this wonderful time of discussion. Today I am so happy to have guests from the Salvation Army with us, and you started to hear in our show today some ringing going on. As you're probably most familiar with Salvation Army, tis the season for a lot of bell ringing as they conduct their Red Kettle campaign, and the person who was ringing that bell was Ron Akins, who was standing outside of the Racine Pick and Save to bring in some great funds to help people in our area. My guest today will tell us a little bit more about Salvation Army. First, about their Red Kettle campaign, of which you're probably most familiar, and then to a program you're probably not as familiar with. And we hope you stay tuned to listen to all of the interesting things that you will discover in today's program. So I'd like to start with our first guest. It is soon-to-be Auxiliary Captain Marie Lewis, who is the administrator and pastor at the Salvation Army Community Center in Kenosha. Welcome, Marie.
Thank you.
I think we'll just send it over to you to tell us a little bit about what the Red Kettle campaign does.
Well, the Red Kettle campaign for the Salvation Army, we do that every year between November, December timeframe. And it's our largest fundraising timeframe of the year. And it funds the majority of our programs throughout the entire year. So it's a really, really important time for us. And it's a super busy time for us as well.
Well, I can imagine just even arranging all of the volunteers and all of the locations that we find them at during this season. How many volunteers do you think ring for you in the Kenosha area?
In the Kenosha area, we probably have, about 100 of them that ring for us throughout the season. We also have some that are paid people that come and ring the bells, because if a kettle has somebody ringing at it, it does so much better than if it's just standing there. People just walk by if nobody's there ringing. So sometimes we hire some people, and which is a benefit in two ways. It helps us to bring in more money, but it also helps those that may not have a job that could use a little extra money during the Christmas season and so on. So
dual purpose.
It's a double
That's
purpose
wonderful.
To that, correct.
That's wonderful. What does the money fund then? What sorts of programs do you have at the Kenosha Community Center where that money goes?
Sure. We have various social programs that we have going on. We have our youth group that it funds, taking care of them and the meals that we provide for them, as well as any activities, you know, that we can do with them. We also have rental assistance. Some of that's through grants and some of that's through our fundraising. And some of it is for energy assistance or transportation things people might need. Furnishings, sometimes that, you know, if we get donations in that respect, we'll have that, as well as a lot of that would go through thrift store type of things, which they'll talk about a little later, I'm sure. But that's what our Red Kettle and our donation money goes towards. And then our biggest thing that we have at our core is our food pantry. And so we have that, and where we're serving, we serve probably about 1,000 people a month.
Oh, goodness, 1,000 people a month. What's required of them in order for them to take advantage of the food pantry? Do you have certain parameters that they must meet in order to be able to get assistance with you?
Correct. You have to live within Kenosha County. There is some changes that will be coming up in the future with several different food pantries are kind of collaborating so that we don't have a lot of duplication. And then we might break it off where within a certain area of Kenosha County is the food pantry that you would have, you'd have to choose, or you'd have to be within that area to go to our particular food pantry. But all of those other services, the only requirement is that you be within Kenosha County and you bring in the appropriate identification and proof of residency and things of that sort.
1,000 people roughly a month to provide for food. I can't imagine the storage that you must have and the grocery bills, so to speak, that must command, right? Can you tell us roughly?
Well, I mean, and even that 1,000 people are who go through our pantry. We also have bread and produce that we don't document quite the same way. And so that's always an additional number of people as well. But the pantry includes like meat products and things of that sort that the other doesn't. And we get, you know, when we get produce in, obviously it goes bad faster. So we want to make sure that it gets out to the people that are going to use it before it goes bad. And same thing with bread. So if you come in and you need something like that, pantry you're allowed to do once a month, but the other you could come in every day if you needed to. So,
what kind of trends, if any, have you noticed over the last few years in the Kenosha area with need and the clients that you're serving?
You know, it's really kind of interesting because although our economy is better, the need has not changed. And it just is sometimes mind-boggling because people just need that little bit of leg up. And sometimes, you know, you may get a job, but it may not be enough to cover everything for you. So it may be better than what you had before, but not enough to cover everything. So that's where the pantry is a bonus or helps to provide that for the people so that they at least have some extra food that they might not have to buy themselves. And as far as our pantry, we get a lot of donations, but some of it is where when we run out, we go and buy it from the store. If we have the funds to do that, then we go and do that.
Now, you had said that the Salvation Army Community Center here in Kenosha is on 75th Street?
Correct.
And I would imagine that it takes quite an army, no pun intended, of volunteers and employees to man and run all of those programs. Can you give us a sense of how many people and volunteers you
sure.
either employ or use?
Sure. We actually are... We have 4 employees, including myself,
goodness.
And the rest are all volunteers. So like you said, it's an army of volunteers. Some of them help in the pantry area. Some of them help administratively speaking. Some of them help with the youth group. Some of them help with the women's group or going to the nursing homes or things of that sort. It's just sorting, get, you know, what comes in. We have to count and sort everything and log it and do all of those things. So some of those volunteers do that as well. So there are various ways that people can help out, and it's a great way to give back to your community as well. But it's we probably have, if you add everything up, it's probably about 50 volunteers in a month giving various roles. But the hours are much more significant than that. We probably have about 1,000 hours.
Goodness. So I would imagine anyone who would walk into the center could find a role as a volunteer if they were so desiring to do so, right?
There would be something. We do have an age limit. I mean, they have to be at least 16. If you want to come in under 16, as in doing service project hours, they'd have to have a parent with them at all times, which is where the bell ringing stuff comes in so nicely. You know, all these kids that need school service hours, just come, you know, you can sign up online even. It's super easy. You just go to KenoshaBells.com, and that'll take you right to the registration for the bell ringing. If you're 16 and over, you can ring on your own. If you're not, it's a great family event. And really, it's kind of fun because when you get little kids dancing around or doing whatever and parents ringing, people give more. It's just amazing because they think the kids are so cute, and they see where the, you know, it's a good cause. Salvation Army does a lot of good for our community, and we have a wonderful community in general, one that's very generous, but there's also not a need.
Well, that's wonderful, and there's still a need for ringers yet this
absolutely.
Season?
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Well, great, because this program will be airing with a week left or so of Christmas to go. Correct. And so if somebody has time that they would like to be able to ring bells for you, now they know how they can get engaged. And it is very fun. I've done it myself. And you can sing. You can bring your own little boombox along. And
we've had it all. We've had people dressed up as in costumes. We had we have one guy's dressing up as Santa. He'll be at Woodman's on Saturday, and so he always brings in a lot. The firefighters come in their uniforms, and they always do great for us as well. We have costumes of, like, gingerbread men and elves that people come in, and they just have fun with it, you know. And quite honestly, the more engaging you are with those passing by, just saying hi, Merry Christmas, how are you doing, whether they give or not, if you're just being friendly, it's just a magnet. They come, and it's great, and it's very nice that they're being generous to us, but it's just being kind to your neighbor as they're walking by. I mean, that's the whole point of it. It just helps people to bring out that spirit within themselves to say hi to your neighbor as they're going by.
Absolutely. So a wonderful way to get into the holiday season and to help a very worthy cause and support many of the programs right here in our own community. I thank you so much for all that you do at the Community Center. But most people are probably not aware of another program that operates underneath the Salvation Army banner, so to speak. And I'm really delighted this morning to bring some more information to our listeners about that program in particular. And I'd like to welcome two guests, Captain Greg Ehler, who is the administrator and pastor of the Waukegan Adult Rehabilitation Center for Salvation Army, and Dwayne, who currently is in a program at the Rehabilitation Center. Welcome, gentlemen, and thank you for coming this morning to join us.
Good morning, Laura. Thanks for having us.
Thank you.
Why don't you start, Greg, and tell us a little bit about what the center is all about.
Sure, I'd love to. It's a wonderful ministry that we have down there. It's encompassing many different aspects of the Salvation Army's work, but first and foremost, we have to remind everyone we are a church before everything else. And in that aspect, we reach out to those who are in need in our communities. And what was established by the founder of the Salvation Army was there was a drastic need for help with getting men and women off of drugs and alcohol and back into the working world. That was actually one of the main reasons that he started the Salvation Army as an organization to begin with. So what we do is we run a work therapy program down in Waukegan, Illinois, and our area of coverage handles Racine County, Kenosha County, and then Lake and McHenry counties in Illinois. And we take men in for a minimum of 6 months to complete the program. And while they're there, we go through 12-step programs. We have spiritual activities that go along with a certain number of church services must be attended each week. And we work with them to start to put the pieces back together again. We start to pick things apart, figure out what were the primary causes of the addictions. Is it a mental thing? Is it a socioeconomic thing? And then we start working to rebuild the gentleman after that, to bring them back into a more productive societal level. So once we work with the alcohol and the drug treatment, we go through the detox process, then we start working on rebuilding things, finding the core causes of everything. And then we work through those processes. Each gentleman who's in the building has mandatory counseling at least once a week with licensed counselors. They also get counseling sessions with us. We have life skills classes, we have job search classes, and while they're with us, we also work on job training. So once you complete the program, I keep saying 6 months because that is the minimum, but we have a maximum of 1 year. So it's not finish the program and get out. In order to graduate successfully, you have to complete the program and all the required classwork, and then you have to be able to find meaningful work and somewhere to live. So once you complete the program, you actually are not going right back to where you were, but you're going back out to contribute to society again.
That's wonderful. And there are certain stages of the program, I hear you saying, in that. So you talk a little bit first about detox. Is that the first thing that happens then when somebody comes to your door?
When they come to our door, we give them a quick evaluation. Because we are not a medical care facility, that's why we struggle with the rehabilitation part of it. We have two or three different organizations that help us with the detox process because we can't do medical detox. So if you come in and sit in a physical state that requires medical assistance, we'll transport you over to one of these other facilities, get everything set up there. Then once you have completed their detox program, they call us and we come back and get you. We're not going to leave you stranded trying to find your way back. And then we'll start the whole process from there once the detox is finished.
Great. And how does somebody come to you? Obviously, people might come to you out of their own volition, but do you take referrals from family members or relatives or organizations at all?
All of the above, actually.
Okay.
If someone determines that they need help and they're ready to seek that help, we won't turn them away. One of the big things we're getting people from now is Department of Corrections, guys who are trying to transition from being incarcerated back into normal lifestyle. That's a seriously difficult thing for a lot of people to go through. We also have an organization in Lake County, Illinois, called A Way Out for Lake County, where people who are arrested for minor drug possession charges or public intoxication, rather than going to jail, can request to come to us.
Oh, that's fabulous. How many clients do you serve then, say, in a typical year?
Last year we had 257, I believe, was the hard number of what we call unduplicated men who came in. And out of that group, 56 completed the program successfully.
I was going to ask if you track them. Some might never make it to graduation.
Happens frequently, sadly.
I would imagine. It's that kind of diseases that you're dealing with.
Yep.
When it comes to addictions. Do you have people then that maybe come back and say, I wish I would have stayed?
All the time. That's why I said 257 unduplicated.
Okay.
Says we do get the guys who will leave and they'll come back and they'll leave and they'll come back. And each time they leave, we evaluate why they left, how far they'd gone in the program to give a better determination of how long we're going to ask them to stay out. Because there are those who will leave, go on a bender, and want to come right back because they have nowhere else to go. And sometimes they have to face the consequences of that choice for a period of time.
Sure. Do you have any sense how many of your, or what percentage maybe of your clients come from the Racine and Kenosha area at all?
I'd be willing to bet close to a third.
Really? Well, that's great. You're nearby. It's not
Yes.
far away. And delightfully, we have somebody who's joined us today who has decided to share his story with us that gives us some insight into why he decided to come to the rehab center. So, Duane, I'm so glad you could join us today.
Thank you.
I invite you to just share your story with us. I think we would all love to hear how you're doing.
Okay. Well, I guess I'll start with some backstory, what led up to me coming to the ARC. I guess, you know, well, of course, it's, you know, drug and alcohol abuse. I started off fairly late, you know. I didn't start using till I was about 19 heavily. And from there, it turned into a very quick downward spiral. Where just, you know, anytime anything didn't go the way I saw it should, you know, that was a reason to use. Getting up in the morning was a reason to use for me, you know, and I didn't see what was going on with myself. You know, I kind of just rationalized with it in my mind. This is just, you know, a 19-year-old kid having fun, just enjoying life. And very quickly, I realized it wasn't that. But by the time I had picked up on it, it was too late for me, and I was just kind of full-blown in my madness.
Do you remember what was the first time that you thought, I'm using to excess, and what was your drug of choice?
It's funny, I was saying I've never had a particular drug of choice, it's always been, I want more, and I would prefer to have yours. You know, because, I mean, I was, in my addiction, I'm a raging addict. You know, I don't care what it is, whatever it is that'll make me not feel the way I feel. And when I first realized that I'm using in excess, at the time I was abusing Xanax. You know, I started off, you know, abusing pills, and, you know, I have these 2-3 day blackouts, you know, where, you know, I'd wake up and I wouldn't remember anything. You know, I'd have to piece together the last couple of days, and, you know, I'd, you know, mix using Xanax with alcohol, smoking marijuana, like I said, anything that would cover up the, at the time I wasn't was unaware of it, just the pain I felt inside that I wasn't able to deal with. You know, from what I've learned, you know, disease is an addiction of the mind. For a long period of time, I didn't find that to be true. You know, I couldn't accept it. I refused to accept it. It was just, this is how I chose to live my life. And I didn't realize I didn't have any control over it. But, like I said, leading up to, you know, it was just a downward spiral that led me to here. And it finally got to the point where, you know, family was getting tired of me. Friends were getting tired of it. People started to distance themselves from me.
How were you supporting yourself? I mean, how were you living at the time?
I worked, you know. There was a period of time where I couch surfed from friends' house. I had my own place at a certain amount, for a certain period of time. You know, I was always able to get a job, keep a job for a little while, but the addiction and using always won that battle. You know, I'd leave work, you know, or I'd use at work, you know. On my way to work, I'm using. While I'm at work, I'm using. When I get home or leave work, I'm using. When I get my paycheck on a Friday, it's gone before Sunday. You know, I'm going to put away what I make, you know, out of what I make, I'm going to put away what I know I'm going to spend on my drugs. And then I'm going to pay for everything else that I have to pay for. You know, my mom helped out for a very long time, but when she finally realized this is what's going on, you know, slowly she started getting fed up. You know, and that is someone who has always been in my corner. And that was the deciding factor for me realizing I needed something different. When I could see the faith in me, that she the faith that she had for me dwindling in her eyes. I had done a 30-day program twice. You know, month or so I'd stay clean after getting out, and then I was back to doing what I was doing. And it finally came to a point where it's, you know, okay, I got to do something different. You know, I'm miserable now. It's no longer fun for me. You know, I can sit back and think about, okay, you know, there was a point in time where using was fun. It's no longer fun. You know, I'm not happy. I wake up every day and the only thing on my mind is, what am I going to do to go out and get what I need? And I grew up in the area of the ARC, and, you know, I started looking it up. You know, somebody told me, hey, Salvation Army has a rehab program. And it's funny, my father owns a shop kitty corner to the north end of the facility. And so I've always seen the place. It's just I've never known what it was. I grew up seeing the men inside of the fence wondering, you know, what are they doing there? And I always laugh about it because it's like, you know, you used to see this place all the time as a kid, and now you're here. You never realizing help was literally right around the corner for you.
Isn't that something? Is there any particular thing that your mom said or did that kind of broke through the fog of addiction for you?
She looked at me one night and she kind of asked me, who are you lying to, me or yourself? You know, are you using? No, I'm not using. I'm fine. And moms know their kids. I've been around you for 25 years. You know me. I can't lie to you. I can't fool you. You know, but for a long time, her hope and faith in me, she just would just let it go, you know. And finally she asked me, you know, who are you lying to, me or yourself? She was like, because you're not fooling me anymore.
I would imagine, Captain Ehler, you also work with a lot of families who are going through the same pain that their children or their loved ones are going through as they're waiting for them to come to the realization that they need help. Is there anything that the program does to support the family surrounding the person who's battling the addiction?
One of the things we tell them right off the bat is for the first 30 days, we segregate the men from the outside world. They're not allowed phones. They're not allowed TVs. They're not allowed to change the channels. They're not allowed to go out of the property and visit people, and they're not allowed to have visitors unless they come to church. And that's the first thing we tell the families is that if you want to see your family member, come on Wednesday or Sunday and sit and worship with them. And if you start building the relationship back up from that point, that by the time they finish here, that will have developed into a habit that continues. And then that's a strength that they can rely on.
That's great. So how was that first 30 days for you?
The first 30 days, it wasn't the worst thing in the world. You know, coming to a rehab is a humbling experience. The worst part about it for me was walking through the door, you know.
What did it do for you?
It's like, I got to admit that I can't do this on my own. I've always been a person who has felt independent. And just through what life has thrown at me, I have to do everything on my own. I can't allow anyone to help me do anything. Even if I'm failing, I'll continue to run into that brick wall as many times until I figure it out. But those first 30 days, you know, it was a little weird because I'm around a bunch of people I don't know. So I'm 25. I've been the youngest person there my entire stay. So I got all these men who are a lot older than me. You know, everyone going through the same thing, but, you know, I'm the new guy here now. I'm young. People kind of look at you. You know, everybody's trying to get a feel for you. You know, most people my age don't get clean, you know. I've lost 10 friends to addiction this past year alone.
Oh, goodness.
It was just a small adjusting period, you know.
What was a typical day?
Typical, you know, up in the morning for breakfast they start the wake-up calls. You can get a wake-up call at 4:30, but, you know, normally everybody's getting up around 5:30. You're in line for breakfast by 6. Eat breakfast, you do devotion. Then if it's a work day, you know, you work from 7:30 to 4, 3 breaks throughout the day.
Doing what?
I've done a variety of things. There's the clothing line, you know, so the donations that come in, we have men who are truck helpers who can go out and work on the trucks to go and pick up the donations or bring donations to the stores. You have people who work on the sorting line who will sort through the clothes, and there are also employees who process the clothes, you know, also other items that they consider brick and brack, you know, electronics, things like that, shoes. You know, we kind of process everything to get put out into the stores. I've done that. I've done maintenance. That's what I'm doing now. You can also hold a position in the house, janitor or, you know, front desk guy.
Kitchen,
you know, yeah. Dispatch, so the people that you speak on the phone to when you call in for a donation are actually people who are in the program. Which, when I first got there, I thought, man, this is just a work camp. But I had to understand what it was doing. It was really breaking me out of the cycle of, dude, what are you used to doing on a typical day? You know, you can't get up and do something to better yourself. You know, I went to Gateway and paid a nice amount of change for 30 days so I can at least get up and go to work for my own recovery. If this, you know, but you have to want it. I had to want it. And that was what I struggled with the first 30 days, too, was, is this really what I want, you know? Like I say, there's a chapel every Wednesday and Sunday. And I could deal with going to the classes, you know, because after work you have your classes Monday through Thursday. Monday through Wednesday are real heavy days. Monday, you know, Thursday, Friday are a little more lax, the meetings and stuff like that. I could deal with going to the classes. I could deal with getting used to 60 or 70 different personalities of people I've never met in my life, working, all of that. But for me, it was the spiritual aspect that I struggled with. You know, I do believe in God, but at that point in my life, I kind of was at a point where it was like, you know, if there is a God, he doesn't love me, you know, because of, you know, look where I'm at, look what I've done, you know. And I used to pace in the back of the chapel Wednesday and Sunday, religiously, you know, because that was going to be the reason I left. You know, it's funny, you know, he always gives this, you know, this announcement, don't fall asleep in chapel, you know. And when I finally did come around to getting used to being there, I looked at it as me being spiritually attacked, because now that I'm awake and I'm trying to stay engaged, well, now that I'm here to stay and I'm trying to stay engaged, I can't stay awake. He's actually woken me up. I fell asleep standing up against the wall, and he had to wake me up. And it was like, you know, wow, you know, it's, I got to get past that. You know, there are small differences in between NA and AA. I'm AA because, you know, I would prefer drugs over alcohol, you know.
So you might want to just describe what you mean by NA or AA for
Narcotics Anonymous and Alcoholics Anonymous.
Sure.
You have CA, Cocaine Anonymous. You know, my, towards the end of my run, when I came here, my drugs of choice were cocaine, marijuana, and a little bit of alcohol. But so I stuck with AA, and just because that's what worked for me, you know, and whatever works for it, whoever you are, you know, that's what you stick with. But, you know, just going to your meetings and all that stuff, you know, it helped me work through, you know, because it's a combined thing, you know. It's a spiritually based program, the Salvation Army itself, as well as, you know, the Narcotics Anonymous program. You have to, you know, surrender it all to a higher power. And that's something that was a struggle for me as well. You know, and with time and practice, it happens, you know. I get up every morning and I have to, you know, ask God, listen, you know, at some points today's just too much for me to handle. I can't, you know. So just take it for me. And because if it were up to me, and this is just the honest truth, if I had things my way, I'd still be out there. You know, just because, you know, it's just, I don't know, it's the way my brain's wired. It's unfortunate, and that's something you learn, you know. My counselor tells me all the time, you know, that's you have, the disease of addiction is only saying you have a sick brain, you know, and whatever, when you're sick, you know, whether you have, you know, a cold or anything, you take your medicine for it. Going to your meetings, staying in church, or, you know, just having a relationship with the higher power or whatever you choose to call it, is your medicine. You know, I've said it in a meeting before, you know, coming to meetings, AA or NA meetings, for me is like eating your vegetables. I hate doing it, but I go because of the nutritional value it has for me.
Can you maybe describe for us, Duane, what life was like? What kind of a person do you think you were at the time that you were using? What was a typical day? How were you feeling? What can you share with us? What were your relationships with your friends or your family?
Well, early on wasn't so bad because it was just everybody's doing it. But in the heart of my addiction, when I was out there using, I was alone. You know, I always felt alone. And I think that is why I used. I went through some pretty traumatic stuff growing up, and it forced upon me a feeling of inadequacy. I've never felt as if I ever met that bar, that standard. So I always overcompensated, you know. I want people to accept me. I want to fit in, you know. But a typical day, you know, I wake up, and the only thing on my mind is, you know, how can I get out of my own head? And the best way I know how to cope, you know, because that was my thing, you know. My problem wasn't drugs and alcohol. It was, drugs and alcohol were a solution to the problem I had, not feeling that I was good enough, not feeling that I was worth it, you know. All the people I've let down in life, you know, letting my mom down and stuff like that. But, you know, I'd wake up. You know, if I was working at the time, of course I'd go to work because I got to have some way to fund my habit. And I'm going to get high.
You know, you bring up some interesting things I wanted to ask you. Did you ever take the ACEs test? Has anybody talked to you about adverse childhood experiences and the trauma connected with them?
No.
Do you use that, Greg, in your program at all? There's more understanding about trauma. Mm-hmm. You had said you had gone through some pretty traumatic experiences in your life, and addiction is usually connected with somebody who has experienced more of these 10 adverse childhood experiences of trauma. So that's an interesting connection that I think wider communities are now grappling with quite a bit, and understanding that, you know, the things that happen to children when they're children can have some really adverse ramifications later on when they reach their adulthood. So that I just wondered if that had been part of your discovery as you've been in the program at all.
That particular program or test, no, I've never heard of it. But as I've grown through the program, that has been something I've had to face and come to terms with. Growing up, I didn't realize how it affected me. Honestly, the way I process things, I stomach them. You know, I push them down deep enough. Or, you know, I'll keep myself so busy I don't have to think about it.
Would you be comfortable in sharing any of those experiences so we know what kinds of things you're talking about?
A big thing was, as a child, I was molested and raped. And that put on that whole demeanor of, one, it forced me to build a wall. A lot of the people consider me to be a very aggressive person. And I explained to them, you guys have to understand, that was my coping mechanism. You can't hurt me if I can't let you get close to me. So I'm aggressive naturally, you know. I've learned to tone it down some, but that's how I processed that. And I stomached it. I didn't want to think about it. I didn't want to have to deal with it. So I pushed it down deep enough to where it was like it wasn't there. And as I got older and I started, you know, honestly, it didn't come back into my train of thought until I was 23.
This
happened between the ages of 7 and 10. And so over a decade. And finally one day, I was at Gateway. And that was why the 30-day program didn't work for me. It just ruffled up a bunch of emotions and then put me back out there to deal with them the best way I knew how. So since I've been there, I've talked with my counselor. I've shared in groups in front of men that I don't know, but I understand I can't hold on to it anymore. But just, you know, just learning how to deal with it and accept it for what it was. I was a kid. I didn't have any control over it. And I used to justify it to myself. You know, if it don't happen to me, it might happen to my brother or one of my cousins or somebody. So I'm protecting them by taking that. And I don't know. I just, you know, I rationalized it the best I could.
I would imagine that has... It's bound up in how you define yourself and your self-value. How do you look at yourself now?
I still know. I got a long way to go. You know, I get a lot of props for being there at my age. I think closest in age I have is 30. But, you know, you get a wide range of people of all ages. But, you know, being the youngest person, there are a lot of people who give me, you know, good job. Because, you know, when we were your age, dude, there was no thinking of coming around. But how do I look at myself? I know that I'm serious this time around, as far as, because I've tried to get clean before and it just didn't work out. You know, I wanted to do it for everybody else, but I couldn't. You know, I had to do it for me. So when I used to look in the mirror and not like who I saw. I'm starting to come around and understand that it takes time to change yourself and to stick with it. So, you know, I'm proud of what I'm doing. I'm proud of myself. And I know that if I stick with it, you know, it's a much better life for me on the other side. And I'm grateful for that.
That's wonderful. And we're all proud of you as well as we sit around the table listening to your story. And we're so glad that you would share it with us. You're in the program, right?
Yes,
this
ma'am.
At this moment.
8 months, the 5th of this month. So, yeah. Coming up on 9.
8 months. And what's your... What's your goal? What are you looking down the road toward in the next few months?
A big thing, I really want to join the service. If I don't do that, which is pretty set in stone, that's what I want to do. I went to trade school for some time for machine operating. You know, just I love construction, love to work with my hands. But honestly, just all in all, to give back to those who graciously gave to me, you know, I had applied for a job here at the Salvation Army to work maintenance. Hopefully, you know, that all pans out, which would be cool because I do feel as if I owe them for what they did for me, you know. Nobody had to, you know, create a place like that to open doors for people like me and help me out, you know. I'm grateful for them every day because I know on my own will, like I said, I've lost, you know, enough friends to this to where that could have easily been me, you know, but I want to be able to give back to, you know, people who struggle with addiction in some way. You know, that's a big reason I said I do this because, you know, my sponsor told me, you know, when you don't share in meetings, when you don't share your story, you're stealing from a group. And you may not find it significant, but somebody's going to learn from what you say. And, you know, so I had to, you know, because I used to go to meetings and just sit there and not say anything. And so I finally started opening up and understanding that I have something to contribute. So that's really what it is. I just want to be able to contribute myself in the future.
Well, you certainly contributed today in giving us a deeper understanding of what somebody battles and, mm-hmm. and walking through the door, making mm-hmm. that first step that you said was so difficult. And Captain Greg, this has got to be very rewarding but difficult work for you as well. So interesting that you... spend your time being able to help people like Dwayne lead a happier, hopefully, and productive mm-hmm. life and feeling like you're walking with them through this.
One of the neat things with what we do is the majority of our staff is actually in recovery, myself included. So it's not a bunch of people who have studied books to learn how to do this, but we've all actually walked where they're walking. So it makes it a little more empathetic, maybe, is the word. We know where they're coming from. So while we sympathize at one level with them, at the same time, we can see a lot of the games they're playing and can show them, look, I see where you're at. I see where you're going. I see what you're trying to pull at the same time. Let's fix this. There's hope on the other side.
Well, it's wonderful work and very needed work, sad to say, because, Dwayne, you had shared with us that you started first using prescription medication mm-hmm. As a way, and I looked up what the situation is for the most recent statistics in Wisconsin, and we had 916 people die in 2017, which is the most recent statistic from overdoses of opioid addiction, and usually prescription drugs is the gateway to that. And so, unfortunately, the work is vast, and we hope that so many people will take that stance of facing their fear, as you did, Dwayne, and walking through the doors for the first time of a rehab center to be able to recover the wonderful person that they are. So thank you all for joining us today. We hope you listeners of WGTD and Community Matters learned something about the Salvation Army and the very fine work that they're doing in our very own communities.
You've been listening to Community Matters. All programs are archived at WGTD.org. Click shows. This is WGTD HD, Kenosha, Racine, Elkhorn, and Lake Geneva.
Jazz, swing, blues, bop, and more is available 24 hours a day on your desktop, laptop, smartphone, or radio. To access 24/7 Jazz WGTD on your computer, go to WGTD.org, where you can listen live, online, 24 hours a day. On your smartphone, download the free WGTD app. In the Kenosha Racine area, 24/7 Jazz WGTD HD2 is available via HD radio. For more information, call 262-564-3030.
Support for WGTD comes from Hupie and Abraham. In a moment, it's all gone. Your job, your car, your entire future. When you are seriously injured in an accident, visit a law firm with experience. Hupie and Abraham, 800-800-5678.